Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Mr. December, Fred Moreland. Fred, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. It has been a bit since we recorded, almost 3 weeks now, if I'm doing math right, which I may not be. Almost 2 weeks, that's right. I was doing it wrong. Things are going well. Just keeping busy, and AEW, almost like the world of MLW, it just never stops.
No, it doesn't. And we have a lot, an absolute lot to talk about here today. And as you can tell, my dog's in the background. Eclair just got done with a neurology appointment where she either has meningitis or a brain tumor. And meningitis in dogs is a lot better than it is in people. So we're hoping that it's meningitis. She's walking around and getting her bearings, and it's been a long day already, but we're excited to record the show.
Yeah, and there it's a lot to talk about. The news is I put together the run sheet for the show every week, and we nearly hit 2.5 pages of news this week. This might be the longest one I've ever done.
Yeah, this is a lot of stuff. Fred, let's kick it off.
Yeah, I think we're just going to dive into the news and then talk about highlights from Dynamite and Collision, then go away. But first, we got to put over that our current plan is that on Tuesday, December 5th, just in case you're listening to this at some point in the future, we will be doing a show with the one and only Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, which is very exciting. We're going to be talking about a lot of things, including the Observer Hall of Fame, Observer Awards, and also just the status of AEW. But I also want to do a mailbag. If you're a longtime subscriber to the Observer Newsletter / Figure Four Wrestling Online, one of the coolest things I think Dave ever did was Sin Limite, which is where he would just answer questions for 2 or 3 hours while Mike Sempervivi asked him those questions. So what I want you to do is, if you have a good question, email it to us at hungepod, that's HUNGEEPOD @gmail.com. We will do our best to ask it if it doesn't suck. That is at my opinion. Sorry. Don't do any fantasy booking stuff. That shit ain't interesting. If you have any questions about the state of the current industry or about the history of wrestling, feel free to ask it. And, I'll do my best to get everyone's questions in if they don't suck.
Fred, I want to ask you about something before we get in here. Did you hear about what happened at Oklahoma State?
What specifically?
There was a dead longhorn placed outside of the farmhouse fraternity house.
Oh, Lord. That I said, did not.
FUCKFH. So F farmhouse.
Okay. Well, and that's a lot.
It apparently has nothing to do with the Big 12 title game tomorrow on Saturday.
But okay, man. Cool. Totally normal and acceptable behavior.
Good normal Lord. Oklahoma behavior.
God. I will never not make fun of Texas A&M after watching them swaying cult-like as they introduced their new coach this past week.
Well, at least he's already been at the university.
Yeah, he's indoctrinated. It's still weird.
That's why he was accepted and Mark Stoops wasn't. Because the devil you know versus the devil you don't.
Basically. Once Mark Stoops does get poached by someone with deeper pockets than the UK.
Hold on. Why would Mark Stoops ever leave? Mark Stoops is making $9 million and all he has to do is go 7-5.
Yeah, basically, it's a sweet deal. But if ever anyone ever offers him, you know, double that, then, you know, you got to start.
Nick Saban's making 11.
It's going up. Jimbo money. Get that Jimbo buyout money.
Fucking Jimbo. Jimbo sucks. That was a hilariously bad contract when they signed it, and it's even worse now.
Well, all right. Look, I'd love to talk college football. Like, seriously, I have so much. Like, my favorite college football story of the past decade has been this year's Iowa team. It is taking a lot of self-restraint to not, like, you know, sidetrack this with a half-hour discussion of just how bad their offense was. So, because it's just my favorite thing. I love it so much. But let's talk wrestling. I've got to be, I got shit to do. So,
yes.
As do you. All right, so I guess her top story of the week. There's several that are, like, at the same level, but I'm going to go with this one first. MJF. Tweeted and then rather rapidly deleted, but it still got out, obviously, that he's injured. He has, according to him, a torn labrum that apparently came when he took the top rope Uranage from Jay White in the main event of Full Gear. And then also he injured his hip when he did the elbow drop that was supposed to go through the table, but didn't go through it because the table collapsed. And then MJF was like, well, I'll make a bad decision here. That shit sucks. Either of those things, I guess. I mean, the Uranage probably should have been fine. Just stuff happens sometimes, I guess. But still, yeah. He's going to work through them, both of those injuries. I guess the plan is if he has to wrestle, you know, I guess, you know, either next week or the week after, I forget when, when they take the mystery tag match from the devil.
It is next Wednesday in Montreal, Quebec, Canada.
Well, there you go. I guess whatever geek squad they're facing, him and Samoa Joe, there's going to be a lot of smoke and mirrors. But
I really hope it's the Johnsons from TNA. I really do. It'd be phenomenal.
It would be. I would also laugh if it was the Creepers from that disastrous 2019 Dynamite. That would pop me. So yeah, something to keep an eye on for sure. Apparently dealing with two major injuries that he's going to try to do like platelet replacement therapy for and just kind of otherwise work through. It'll be interesting to see just how much that limits his ability to work. I think that's kind of the biggest internal AEW story. The biggest external story is, of course, CM Punk, who I will never be able to escape talking about in my entire life. He debuted for WWE in somewhat of a surprise at Survivor Series, and then cut a rather heartless promo on the following Raw. And I don't know if you watched that, Tyler, but I watched both the live version and then the one they put online. And the sweetening WWE does is hilarious. And I know that AEW has done some sweetening of their own. So this isn't like a sweetening bad WWE bad thing. It was just very funny just how hard they pushed on the cheer, boo, CM Punk buttons at appropriate times. Just tickled me, that's all.
I have something I want to say.
Yeah.
The tonal shift from Saturday night to Monday night.
Oh, yeah.
Astounding.
I thought he kind of looked rough coming out, just like tired. And
he had to talk to Triple H. Of course he's tired.
I can see how that's draining. for CM Punk. I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see how this works. The last time I really watched any level of like WWE with any level of investment, I mean, I'm following their big matches this year. But like was like 2015, and that was when the crowd was 100% like, well, not 100% obviously, but you know what I mean. It definitely had a portion that was like, we're going to boo things we don't like. And it very much seems like the 2023 WWE fandom is, we like what you're doing and we will 100% play along. And that's a good thing to have. That's not a criticism at all. This is very interesting to watch because, you know, I could see in a different era, you get this much ballyhooed CM Punk return with kind of a egg of a promo, you know, just a flop and some crowd turning on it. But I can't imagine even what it would take for to happen on screen for a WWE crowd to, even a Mania crowd, to like turn on the product loudly.
Yeah, and the big thing is all the fans, and I'm not the first one to say this and I won't be the last, all the fans that used to chant CM Punk at shows to take over Raw, they're gone.
Yeah,
this
I really do think so.
So I guess my big question is, outside of scalping AEW, who is CM Punk for?
I think that this is a crowd that may not, you know, a chunk of them may not know who CM Punk is outside of like, oh, he's a bad guy because he works for the other company and we're, you know, WWE devotees. But, you know, I think that that same chunk will also go along with the idea of him being a big star in WWE when he's presented as such and willing to go along with whatever direction they have planned. I think the better question is, you know, what will he exactly offer WWE? Because to be honest, outside of a few matches, you know, like the Samoa Joe match was actually like very good for by CM Punk. And I'm not saying he's like completely shot or anything, but at the same time, I thought it was very noticeable how he was, if he hadn't outright lost a step, I thought that he was 100% limiting himself on especially the collision matches, like the multi-man tags. Those were almost all set up to like give him the night off and have FTR, you know, there's three or four I think big like 6 or 8 man tags on collision during the CM Punk era. They very much felt like, let FTR do the heavy lifting and CM Punk will like come in, hit a couple moves, get a pop, and then tag out. And I just think that's, you know, kind of fascinating. And I'm going back through my match ratings. And like, he had, obviously, the all-in match was a great match. That was like 4.5 stars. 4.25, I should say, on my big old spreadsheet. And then he had like a pretty good Samoa Joe match on Collision and pretty good Satoshi Kojima singles match on Forbidden Door. But, you know, I can't really say any other efforts by him were like at a superstar level. So if he's not a great worker anymore, and like, you know, we all know what his version of being a great worker was, and he's not, he doesn't have the drive in him to cut great promos, then what does he really offer? I think that'll be interesting to watch going forward.
Yeah, he doesn't. I don't really think he offers a whole lot. His biggest asset to the company was, like, to AEW, he was the genesis of AEW, and wanting real professional wrestling in this country, and wanting a change, and. Now, he just feels like a sellout, and I think he knows it. I think he knows that this is the last time that he'll really be able to get a big deal, a big contract. I will say, TNA offered him. Dude should have went to TNA. He would have been able to do real professional wrestling and make good money. They're throwing money around now. This isn't like 2014 Destination America, Panda Energy, TNA.
Yeah.
They want to make a splash. They want to make a big move. And they talked about it on the flagship. The first person to take that is going to be interesting. Because then all of a sudden, you're going to give them validity. And the second they have a little validity with what this roster currently is, it's a good roster. It's got depth. It's got talent. It's got veterans. It's got up-and-comers. It's not a great roster. We're not talking like 2006 at TNA where you had like peak AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and Chris Sabin. You still have Sabin, but he's slowed down just a little bit. And then you had Then you also had Samoa Joe, who's blossoming into the superstar. You had Kurt Angle coming into the company. Christian Cage. Abyss was great. Like, you had so many, like, if AEW would have been TNA in 2006, just imagine what that could have become. And TNA has the chance to do that again. This time, they arguably they don't have as high end of a roster, I don't think, but it's deeper. Josh Alexander, Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin's still there. Trinity's done wonders for the women's division. And, I mean, she is an above-average worker. She's not great, but the knockouts division has arguably been the strongest women's division in the entire country for a decade. They're just consistent and good. And every once in a while, they peak really high.
But, Mike Bailey. Don't forget Mike Bailey.
Oh, I love Speedball. Speedball looks like somebody you just took out of Street Fighter. And I know that's the gimmick. But you feel it. And that authenticity, it feels like he's a Street Fighter character. He doesn't just look the part. He feels the part. And I like that a lot. TNA could be really fun over the next couple of years. And I'm really excited to see how that manifests.
Yeah.
Imagine if they get Camille. Because Camille's contract's done on January 1st.
Look, if AEW is not throwing money at her, then I really don't know what they're doing.
Give her whatever she wants. She has turned into a very good worker, along with looking like $1 billion.
Yeah.
She's physically impressive. She's got like the build, the height, and she's attractive. And she's learned to talk, which when she was with Nick Aldis, she didn't talk at all. I don't know what her ceiling is, but it'd be a great add to the division.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, couple interesting notes on CM Punk is he still has those NDAs, so he can't talk about certain people in AEW, which you would have to imagine is at least like the Elite and Tony Khan. So that kind of takes direction out of his promos when he cuts them in WWE. He can't really do the whole like, that company is bad thing without probably losing some money. And then Dave Meltzer also reported that the signing of CM Punk was a Nick Khan move with input from Paul Levesque. And there was no Vince McMahon involvement at all. So just a different era of WWE, which is kind of really a seismic shift in professional wrestling and also being kind of underplayed when you talk about professional wrestling in 2023.
Big Dig Nick strikes again.
Yeah.
It's about making money. That's all he gives a crap about. It's about making money. And will CM Punk pop business? I'm concerned that he won't because of the factors we talked about. The people that loved him aren't big fans of the company anymore. There's been a massive tonal shift in what AEW is as a company. We'll find out.
Yep, something to watch. Related to the CM Punk story, it became a big deal in the news this week, I guess, that Bryan Danielson sat on the disciplinary committee, that decided to terminate CM Punk's contract. The committee was basically him and two lawyers, and it was apparently their recommendation to fire him. And you'd have to think that if Tony Khan didn't want that to happen, he would not have let that happen. But, you know, it did. Boy, we really should, like, there's a lot to write or talk about just specifically on its own about how the whole CM Punk situation was handled in AEW. As much as I think CM Punk is annoying and I think really screwed a lot of this up himself, I think Tony Khan did some not so great leadership. So, you know, all that along the way.
I want to talk about this for a second. In a vacuum, I understand where Tony Khan is coming from. I think it's a little overblown to say it's complete bad leadership. I actually think it's a net positive that he sent it to a committee. And
I wasn't saying that part was bad leadership, for the record.
Okay. Well, here's my thought process. Tony Khan wanted to fire him. And this is my conjecture, so just play along.
Sure.
Wanted to fire him, but he knew that he needed to make sure it was the right decision for a lot of angles. So he gets a locker room leader in Bryan Danielson, somebody he trusts to be level-headed and make a smart decision, which by all accounts, that's Bryan Danielson, and lawyers to make sure that you're taking care of it from a business and legal perspective. No emotions attached. Just look at the facts, and let's make sure that we're coming to a smart conclusion. I think he wanted to fire him on the spot, but going about the process and doing your due diligence, I think when you're talking about a business like pro wrestling, look, if you were my boss at Home Depot and I got in your face and was physically confronting you, you're firing me on the spot because it's Home Depot. This is pro wrestling. There are slightly different levels to some of this stuff. And I'm not saying as a justification as it's okay, but it's going to be more tolerant if you like get in your boss's face in professional wrestling, considering the nature of the business, than it is at somewhere like Home Depot. And I think it's smart for Tony to look at it from a broad perspective, talk to multiple people, and get multiple people's thoughts on this before coming to that final conclusion, which arguably is what he wanted anyways. And I think that's good leadership, even though it may not outwardly feel like it.
Yeah. Yeah, my criticisms would be, I think, just allowing the situation to go on for so long and trying to bargain your way through a situation that would not work, essentially. I also feel like this was kind of overblown in terms of like Bryan Danielson's import to this. I think that and I also think some people were like, oh, like really stupidly oversimplified this to Bryan Danielson firing CM Punk. Obviously it's a little more complicated than that. And I also think it's not a surprise that he made that decision. It was pretty obvious at that point. I can't imagine what could have changed, what could have occurred to make that a workable situation. And I don't know, man. Just kind of tough.
Yep, exactly.
Well, continuing on the CM Punk situation discussion, I'm going to skip down a little bit on my big old sheet of news. QT Marshall is gone from AEW at the end of the year, December 31st. The connection here with CM Punk is that, for a while QT had quite a bit of power. He was at one point, apparently, according to Drew Lanza, the number two guy in AEW next to Tony Khan. And it's also notable that when Collision launched, basically a CM Punk show, CM Punk wanted him kept off of Collision and away from the show, too. Lanza also said that one of Punk's ideas was to basically immediately break up QTV and have Hobbs kill everyone and, get him away from that act. So, like I've always said, CM Punk is right about everything, and
he was never wrong. Fucking right about that.
He was right about that. Yeah, seriously, like, I can't disagree with that opinion at all. That was basically my opinion, so of course it's correct. QT Marshall was also very well liked backstage. He helped people a lot with like finishes and match layout. I think the guy is talented in a way. I do think I'm not a fan of QTV. I thought that was pretty much a failure from the start. As a creative idea, I think it just flopped. But I think he's talented. He's a good wrestler. He's good at being kind of that scumbag heel.
Remember when he was Dollar Store Will Ospreay for a minute?
Yeah, that was fun.
Gadcord gymnastics. It was awesome.
Remember like the 2 week period where like he owed money to he was being extorted by the bunny, I think it was. Or was that Penelope Ford? One of the two of them. It's kind of a weird storyline in early Dynamite that got abandoned quickly. There's a lot of people backstage that are not happy he's leaving the company. And the Nightmare Factory has kind of been Wally pipped by Create a Pro, according to Joe Lanza again from the flagship this week. But the people that trained during the they were on the come up during the Nightmare Factory era, the first couple years of AEW, and especially during 2020 and the pandemic when a lot of people were just working there regularly. I think QT is a remarkably important figure to them, and I do think this hurts the company some backstage. Now, there is reporting, pretty consistent reporting, that QT wants to be a professional wrestling star. He wants to be a guy on screen that gets a push. And, you know, I just put him over. I think he's very talented. I do not know where he fits. I just can't really see him fit in as a TV guy, considering who AEW and WWE are pushing. He just doesn't really feel like a WWE guy in terms of what they traditionally like. AEW, I mean, obviously was not getting those opportunities. But I frankly don't know that there's too many guys on the guys, you know, too many men on their roster that I would push QT ahead of. Now, could he have been like a good, like Ring of Honor mid-carder, you know, or upper mid-carder? Yeah, sure. I could see that. But I think really the best spot for him to end up right now, if he can get it, is Impact. I think he could be a pretty major player there, and if he goes down another level to like NWA or MLW, I think he could be a main eventer in either of those companies, and it would be a big upgrade on a lot of the talent they have there. So I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what he does next. I did do journalism today, baby's first journalism. I emailed QT, and there's this quote going around from House of Wrestling, which kind of isn't really well expanded on, but basically there is a report that he is part of why he's leaving AEW is he's unhappy with the direction of the company, and he feels like it's becoming more New Japan like without any real follow-up on what exactly that means, which this is kind of funny, and I feel like a Trevor Dame tweet really put this best for people like me who are like, yeah, I can see why you'd be unhappy with the direction of the company. Then you see the rest of the quote, which is it's becoming too much like New Japan, and then people like me are like, huh? But I also read, and I can't recall where at this point, so I apologize for that. I've read so much crap this week, but basically it's could very well be that New Japan in this quote is either referring to the influx of talent like Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher, or it could be the addition of the Continental Classic and kind of going back to an emphasis on matches over, I don't want to call them stories, because even though that's what's how some people refer to them, but like the WWE style of storytelling of, like, you know, the backstage talking segments and all that. Now there is a report from Fightful Select that MLW has interest in him. I think that would be a great move for both sides there, and very interesting to watch. But yeah, I think QT is still good, and I'm interested to see what happens next with him. And best of luck to him. MLW or NWA, I really believe would both be very smart to pick him up, and Impact would be too.
I think he should go to NWA. I think you could realistically build him up to be an NWA world champion.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Speaking of journalism, I did a journalism too, Fred.
Oh, yeah?
I wrote an article for Voices of Wrestling.
Well, then.
I know. We'll talk about that later, but I wrote about Jon Moxley and why Jon Moxley is basically the savior of AEW.
Yeah. I did fail to actually say what my journalism was. I reached out to QT to ask him for clarification on that statement. He said that he would be able to clarify it, not necessarily with us, after December 31st when his contract expires. Okay, let's see. Going back up the sheet, the Wrestling Observer newsletter this week has some really interesting information on AEW's finances for 2023. So let's talk about that some. Basically, they're expected to finish the year with $170 to $175 million in revenue. That is up from last year's. His number was over $100 million. Doesn't get more specific than that, other than saying that it barely cleared that bar. So let's just assume it's like 101 or 102.
Yeah.
So that's like a 75% increase. You know, they damn near doubled their revenue increase. Now the question is, did they were they profitable? Which no one outside the company really knows. there's, you know, undoubtedly some increased costs with more pay-per-views and more TV shows and the cost, the startup cost of starting Collision. I think those are all important factors to consider. But, you know, if they're not profitable right now, they may be. One important thing to consider for next year is that Warner Brothers Discovery, you know, this year, Dynamite, is that option year from the last contract they signed. And that option year did have a escalator in terms of how much money was coming in. So that should definitely push them closer to being profitable. The current TV deal does expire at the end of 2024. One really interesting note, I think, is that Meltzer said that no pro wrestling company has come close to these revenue numbers, except for WWE basically every year since 98, and WCW in 1998, and maybe 97 and 99. So AEW is operating at basically a level we haven't seen for a non-WWE company in 25 years.
Yeah, that rules. I think it's important to note the profitability, because we don't know, they're not getting a ton from Warner Brothers Discovery. I think the recent number reported was $44 million per year. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't know if that was including Collision or not. Including Collision, you got to think that's going to get a lot closer to 60, if not more. But I think it's important that even though it doesn't include those numbers right now, like a major TV deal, Tony Khan did say that he expects to finalize that major TV deal in the calendar year 2024. And that once they do, it's going to be massive for AEW. That's a big part of making sure you're profitable. That's why the NFL is so profitable. That's why the NBA is profitable. You're not going to always fill up these buildings when you go somewhere, but you know what you do have? They're paying you X amount no matter what product you put on the TV. Doesn't matter if it's a great game like Eagles Bills from last week or an absolute shit game like Patriots versus Giants. It matters that you have that TV money. And for AEW, it's going to be one of the biggest things in determining, is this going to be a successful company? Is this going to be a viable long-term option? Which we have no evidence to say that it's not. Obviously, the last few months of booking have been spotty at best. But at the end of the day, when you're making $170, $175 million in revenue without a major television deal, because I wouldn't consider the deal that they currently have with Warner Brothers Discovery as a major television deal. Once they get that, all bets are off. Because if they are able to just match the $175 million in revenue, and that's their TV deal, $175 million a year, that's a very impressive mark. It's a very impressive level. And now you're talking a massive influx of cash. And that means a lot. It's like a lemonade stand starting with $20. And then all of a sudden, dad just invests $100 so you can go bake a bunch of cookies and stuff for people to buy at while they're getting their lemonade. Like, it matters. And yeah, they're on the right track. I'm excited to see where this goes. Obviously, there are still concerns about the long-term storytelling and booking of this promotion, considering how the last few months have gone under MJF's reign. But business-wise, it's hard to argue anything but a massive success.
Yeah, and excuse me. I mean, the way that the industry is set up in 2023, you need that TV money to be a high-level success. And once AEW gets that, because it does appear to be essentially very likely that that'll happen, I think that that will make them, frankly, a made company, at least for the short term. You can never really tell long term. But yeah, I mean, it's really exciting, I think. So that will be interesting to see. Two other notes tied to this that I found interesting, also both from Dave. The WWE actually went to Warner Brothers Discovery. And, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom with certain people paying attention to things, and not unfairly, about AEW's financials. First of all, that, you know, just there's concerns about the bubble popping for sports rights to some extent. Specific, not the big ones, but, you know, when you're on a lower level and, you know, AEW is smaller than WWE, so it's not an unfair conclusion to wonder if they'll be able to make decent money when, you know, they aren't as big as WWE. I think that's kind of a flawed assumption, but it's an assumption that's out there. Warner Brother just outright declined to negotiate with WWE. And despite the fact that, like, David Zaslav is publicly, you know, flexing like he's not going to negotiate with the NBA at all, I have to think that's a pretty positive sign for AEW that WWE wasn't even, like, talked with. Now, is it really in Tony Khan's best interest to only negotiate with Warner Brother Discovery? I don't think so. You probably get more money if you shop it around some, but, you know, he obviously really values the Warner Brother Discovery relationship, and there's value in having a super safe relationship like that, as long as they keep getting, you know, increases in money. So, so I think that'll be something to watch at the end of next year, or maybe a little earlier. And the second thing that I thought was really interesting is that, you know, this actually, the growth of AEW actually hurts MLW in a specific way. MLW is currently suing WWE as part of their, basically claiming that WWE is a monopsony, which is basically where a single buyer controls the market. It's similar but different from a monopoly. And typically, the legal threshold, not officially, but kind of officially, is that if one company controls 90% of the market share, that's a monopsony that has to be looked at and possibly, you know, broken up or otherwise, you know, worked against. Last year, according to Meltzer's numbers, it was when that lawsuit was filed, actually, I should say, it was believed that WWE had a 92% market share. So over that magic 90% number. But according to Meltzer's numbers, again, this year, that number would be closer to 80% as AEW share grows. And, you know, the idea that AEW's growth would hurt this lawsuit by MLW just is very amusing in a roundabout kind of way. Just kind of a funny trick of history, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Okay, more news. Good God.
So I'm going to talk about this MLW thing because...
Yeah, sure.
I would love to actually get a lawyer on here to talk about it because it's a very interesting argument that MLW is trying to make, because one of the genesises of their argument is the fact that they cut a deal with Reels and then all of a sudden Reels went on to Peacock and then none of their programming was allowed to air, even though it was already airing on Reels. That kind of pushback, I don't know if it's like libel where you have to meticulously prove six different parts in order to prove that it's libel. Whereas slander, you only have to prove five, because slander is not a in the written word. It's like the rectangle square theorem. Slander is a rectangle, libel is a square.
Okay.
You have to have slander with libel, but you don't have to have libel. Or libel is always slander. Slander is not always libel. And I'm wondering how that theorem portrays into the idea of a monopoly, because they are, and it's evident that they are pushing MLW out and not allowing them to get the airspace that they theoretically had earned that through their workings with Reels and then other elements around that. But obviously AEW being successful is kind of its own thing, but it doesn't necessarily diminish the practices that WWE is utilizing, which I think is what MLW is actually suing about. So I'm wondering how much cross-pollination you have between the two, to where it AEW success actually helps WWE in this lawsuit, because it doesn't impact their business practices.
Yeah, it's a very interesting lawsuit. Now, what's really notable, I think, is always to keep in mind here, is basically this case was taken up by MLW's legal team, Kasowitz Benson Torres, which is a massive legal firm. With nine separate offices, like they've done a bunch of huge cases. They basically took it up without payment up front. I think basically the reporting was that they're going to get paid on the back end, you know, as part of the judgment. And for a law firm this big to take that case that way, I think it's very indicative that they believe that the case has merits. You know, this is. if you'll remember about a decade ago, there were some really rinky-dink concussion-related lawsuits filed against WWE by a lawyer who, from the analysis I read, thought he did not do a very good job on those cases. This isn't that. I think that this is... this large law firm seems to believe it has legs, and I think that means, you know, quite a bit. So
it'll be fascinating to continue to watch, because it is noteworthy that it passed through and is allowed to go to trial, I think, mm-hmm. is where we're at.
Yeah, I believe WWE tried to dismiss, and the judge rejected that motion. So it does appear they're heading to trial.
Yeah. All right. What's next, Fred?
What's next is All In Wembley. Like I said, this is a huge news week. They went on sale to the public today. I believe as of yesterday, they were at about 29,000 tickets sold. It'll be really interesting to see how the numbers go today. This is huge. I don't think they're going to end up selling as many tickets as last year. Last year, I think they, what was the big number again that Will Ospreay got tattooed and then found out maybe that was just the turnstile number, and then we had a big debate about what that actually meant. Good Lord. I'm vamping here. Okay, so the official attendance as far as people going through the turnstile was 72,265. The number of tickets sold was 81,035, and then Meltzer estimated that 84,000 to 85,000 tickets were distributed in total, including comp tickets. I don't think they're going to hit those numbers, but right now they are trying really hard to. I don't know what I'm saying. Let me rephrase that. Sorry, they really jacked up the prices on tickets, kind of notoriously. I've seen people tweeting stuff like they paid £80 for a ticket last year, and that same section is now £300 a seat. So they're really trying to get a lot of money off this. They have increased the numbers, and before they even went public, they had sold 29,000 tickets. So that's a real hell of a number right there.
Yeah, I think if they sell 60% of the tickets that they did, this is me speculating, they're going to reach the same gate. Last year was about getting as many people in that building and setting a record. Yeah, they're going to try and make money, and they did make. They made a lot of money. I think the gate mm-hmm. was almost 10 million American. But it wasn't about making as much money. It was about making history and putting people in that building. This year, about making money. They know they're not going to sell the same amount of tickets. The product isn't as hot. It's the novelty of it is now gone. It's not the first time you're ever running Wembley. It's not all these things about beating WWE's SummerSlam arc in 1992. There's just elements of it that are not there. Now, it's about trying to make as much money as you can per person. And I think they're going to do that.
Yeah, obviously they want to make a lot of money, and even if they don't sell as many tickets, they should be able to do that. I don't know, something to keep an eye on for sure. I think they'll end up being just fine. There were some predictions that like they'd get less than 10,000 tickets, and it's just like, nah, man, that's not gonna happen.
Look, I understand being down on WWE, and there are very few people as down on WWE or sorry, on AEW as you and I, Fred. We've been very down on the tone of the promotion over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
However.
Months.
However. Come on.
Yeah. You got to be realistic about it. They're going to move some tickets. Big financial success probably ahead for them again. But also, you know, I don't think this is really indicative of AEW's interest with fans. And another thing to go back to the financials part we just discussed is that, and Tyler just had to step away for a second, is that some people in AEW, at least according to Meltzer, are arguing that these increased financials, the increased revenue, is indicative of people being critical of a drop in interest of AEW, being wrong, essentially. And I think that's just kind of mistaken right there. You know, you can't increase the number of opportunities for people to give you money and then point to that and just say, oh yeah, we're definitely, interest is up because revenue is up. Like, that's not a one-to-one relationship. It's a very good sign that pay-per-view buys have not fallen, but I think that TV ratings are large, you know, they're down year over year. And, you know, we looked at that last time we talked about the dip in AEW ratings versus TBS and TNT in general, how it's much further for AEW. I mean, I think in general, you know, most of AEW's business indicators are down year over year, whether it be attendance or TV ratings, and pay-per-view buys is the outlier, of that. So I would not take that or the ticket sales for this, you know, upcoming All in Wembley to be indicative of like no problems in AEW. But I also think that we need to be realistic that like AEW is not on death's door or anything like that. I think a lot of people have PTSD from WCW, and this is not 2000-2001 WCW. They're definitely not in that situation. It's fair to be very annoyed with how AEW has taken some things. At the same time, you have to be realistic about the business prospects of that. Another big story that I think can't be really overstated. Being the Elite is done, according to Dave Meltzer. Now, you know they can always change their mind and bring it back. It's a YouTube series. There's not exactly like a big investment in terms of keeping that going or what it would take to relaunch it, I guess I should say. But for now, Being the Elite is not coming back. And I think that's very reflective of how different the Young Bucks standing in professional wrestling is from when it started. You know, they were hungry guys in the indies when it started, and now they're guys that are made in a major American professional wrestling company. And just very noteworthy. You know, I do think that the quality of the show has dropped markedly over the past 2 years. Their attempts to make new people really fell off. They kind of just weakly went with like Ryan Nemeth and the Librarians, which wasn't exactly, we're not talking about Marty Scurll here, or even Flip Gordon. But yeah, now they are running in its place, Being the Dark Order. If that first episode is indicative, I may not watch the second. kind of stunk. I think the magic of Johnny Hungy and all that is kind of gone. But yeah, big sea change there in the history of AEW.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, I like that it's changing, and I think it's good that it's changing, but with change sometimes comes frustration, it can be sad, it's not always good, but things evolve, and you just gotta kind of go with it, and I'm just glad we never have to watch the librarians again. They seem like good humans.
Yeah, I'm not burying them as people. Shit. I kind of like, you know, Peter Avalon as a worker. Leva Bates seems like a lovely person.
Peter Avalon's a good job guy. Very good job guy.
He's a good job guy. I actually gave him like 3.5 stars. That was Michael Nakazawa that teamed with Brandon in that one squash match. But I mean, like, Avalon's a perfectly fine jobber for where AEW is right now. I feel like the librarian's gimmick just was dead on arrival, unfortunately. Oh, I probably should. Tyler, I have so much more news to go through. We can't. We are 48 minutes in, and I'm not even halfway through. Good God. Katsuyori Shibata had to basically emergently go back to Japan. I'm not entirely sure why. That's why he lost his pure championship to Wheeler Yuta on Rampage last week with minimal build.
Gotta think it had something to do with family or his visa.
Yeah, I would bet visa first. Hopefully everything's fine with his family. And if it's visa, then hopefully they'll be able to take care of that, you know, relatively quickly. I just saw this just pop up, Tyler. The Fresno State football coach is stepping away due to health concerns, Jeff Tedford. So,
I had seen that. I hope everything's okay.
Yeah.
They also weren't specific how long he was stepping away for. Oh. If this was permanent or just for the bowl game.
Yeah. I just saw that and had to share that. Okay, Full Gear buys. Per Meltzer, you know, with Thanksgiving, those numbers are going to be disrupted some, but early numbers seem to indicate it's going to be somewhere between 122,000 and 144,000, which would be up from Wrestle Dream, which looks like it did 110,000. So that's about a 10 to 30% jump right there.
Let me say this, Fred. Yeah. It feels like it's down year over year from Full Gear. But when you put Wrestle Dream in the middle, and I want to say if it reached 144, Full Gear would have been down about 15-ish thousand. That feels about the right number. Well, you replace that 15,000 with 110,000, and adding that extra pay-per-view may have trickled down and taken away some of the Full Gear buys.
Yeah.
But you still get a significant amount more buys, and that's the thought process behind having more pay-per-views.
Yeah, it ends up being profitable. There has been no point in the history of professional wrestling or UFC or boxing or whatever where adding pay-per-views or increasing the prices of pay-per-views is a negative to your overall business. You may get less buys, but the increased revenue, whether it be from a higher price tag or from more shows, benefits you in the long run. We saw that even going back to when WWF and WCW moved on from like their 3 or 4 shows a year to like monthly ones. And when they moved on from like, you know, WWF moved on from their mini pay-per-view in your house idea at a lower price tag to just full-fledged pay-per-views, those all worked. And people always said people will not pay for this. And you saw this into, you know, the past 10 or 20 years where people said no one will pay these increased prices for UFC pay-per-views, or no one will buy UFC pay-per-views if they're put behind the ESPN paywall. And it's been wrong every time. And we have not at some point, you know, you are going to charge too much for a pay-per-view. If you charge $500 for a pay-per-view, you may not make money like you would at the current price tag levels. But we do not have evidence at this point in time that what that point is. All right. Ratings. I don't know how much time we're going to have to talk about these shows, but here's the ratings. Dynamite this past Wednesday, 858,000 overall, 0.29 demo. That's their best rating since the start of the NBA season back in October. Collision, 317,000, a 0.09 demo. That is their worst rating ever in their normal Saturday time slot. Of course, that ran opposite Survivor Series, which just killed it dead. And then Rampage, which was moved off its usual time slot to lead into Collision, did a worse 264,000 0.08 demo. That is its lowest overall rating and third lowest demo in the show's history. The only demo numbers that are worse were from other nights off the usual night. I don't want to read too much off of one-offs here, but I think that the Collision and Rampage numbers are just a continuation of how the thing that hurts AEW the most right now is WWE, if they run opposite each other. And both of those numbers from last Saturday are tough. They're not good.
I will say, I think the Dynamite number is good. The Collision or Rampage numbers, whatever. whatever. Like, it's so hard because of what Collision and Rampage are dealing with their time slot. When you move it, it's a killer. Just look at what happens to SmackDown when it goes to FS1. Dynamite beat SmackDown on FS1.
Yeah.
It's unfair when you're talking about moving time slots. It's not a permanent move. It was a permanent move. Then we could have a better conversation. It's a temporary move. You can't judge on that kind of one-off. It's just, no, it's fine. Is it great? No. Whatever. I think you just move on. And when you move it, the network understands there's going to be a dip. You understand there's going to be a dip, and you just hope it doesn't crater. And honestly, that Collision number, like, yeah, the Collision was in its normal time slot, but you're going against Survivor Series, and premium live events have been known to just crush AEW because there's a lot of crossover. You know, would you rather watch Collision or Survivor Series War Games? Most people are going to say, I'm going to watch the PLE because it's War Games. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying that's just your reality. Like, I don't love it. I don't like it. And it's also one of the reasons why I would try not to be your competition and try to be yourselves. Because I bet you, if you were just AEW, number's probably 400. A 25% increase. Just by doing the shit that you were real good at when you started the company.
Yeah. I do think that the Collision number is meaningful since it was their usual spot. I do think that they get hurt by WWE, by their shows, when they run head to head, and you know, that's it. Not much else to it, I think. Let's see what is next. Okay. Let's do some, quick hitters here. All right. Matt Hardy on his podcast said that he is very frustrated with how the Hardys are being used, and he thinks they have more to offer to the promotion.
Do you really have more to offer, Matt? And I don't mean this insulting. They're just, for lack of a better term, they're washed.
For a company like AEW, which is really built around high-level matches, I just don't know where the Hardys fit in. You know, I think their last couple of six-man tags I've watched with Brother Zay, man, Brother Zay is, I think he's quite improved, actually, and is doing some heavy lifting to make those matches watchable. I think he's a hell of a worker. He's a hell of a seller, at least. And, I think he's improved quite a bit from 2019, so good on him. Hey, that's a transition point. SRS, Sean Ross Sapp, has reported that Mark Quinn may be back in action soon. He was seen backstage. And he also mentioned in the same report that Thunder Rosa is ready to go. She's just waiting on creative. Maybe that creative can be the end of Timeless Tony. Okay, so Serena Deeb.
That's Mariah May's job.
I worry about how long that's going to take. All right, next. Serena Deeb has been cleared to return. She was out due to unprovoked seizures, which is pretty damn scary. Now, there were reports that something played a role there with drama with her backstage, that she had apparently gotten into some arguments or something. I forget the exact details at this moment. But, you know, I certainly hope that her health has improved, and frankly, she could help out this women's division. So
seizures are scary, man.
I mean,
I'm dealing with it with my dog. My best friend has epilepsy. I wish her all the best. The easy part about seizures is they can be controlled. The tough part about seizures is figuring out how to control them.
Yeah, that is, you gotta.
What triggers a seizure is so different from person to person or animal to animal. We were lucky enough where all of Claire's blood work came back clean. Like, oh, that's great. Oh, wait, how do we know what's causing them and how can we fix it? Well, we went to a neurologist and we're hoping it's not the brain tumor. But like, that's the tough part. Like, you can be on medications and cycle through, and it takes a long time because you have to be on them for a while to really figure it out. And I mean, my best friend's been living with it for 13 years. Then they figured out, oh, post-college, eat a good diet and get enough sleep, you idiot. That's basically what he has to do. Yeah. When you have two kids, that can be hard, but he's got a pretty great wife and they make it work.
Yeah, it's, you know, on top of that, when you're starting a new medication for seizures, you have to wait for them to taper to the right level and, you know, hope that you pick the right ones. It's really tough to control that. Moving on, a couple notes on Sammy Guevara. First of all, he has been cleared to wrestle after his concussion, and he is also a father. He and T-Melo are welcomed a baby girl to the world on November 28th. So congratulations to them, and congratulations to Sammy on getting cleared. Next note, Bandido will need a second surgery due to his arm not healing properly from the first one. Now, I did just see a tweet from Bandido indicating that there is a possibility that therapy is an option on the table. So I think he's going to try that first and see if he can avoid the second surgery. Hopefully he will be able to return soon. He's awesome.
Yeah, Bandido rules, man. I hope he's okay. It would be a net benefit for him to come back healthy.
For sure. It'd be nice if we could get a luchador in like a truly pushed position, but, you know, AEW. Chuck Taylor, he is out of action right now. It's believed to be due to a foot injury. I don't know if you saw his partner Trent Beretta's singles match, I should say, in New Japan against Shingo Takagi at the last Strong show they did last month. It ruled. 4.5 stars. Recommend that to check it out. There are no plans for Ronda Rousey to work in AEW or Ring of Honor again right now. That was not like the start of a contract or anything. It was basically a one-off. She just happened to be there. Tony Khan was like, hey, you want to work? And she was like, yeah, sure. So she basically did a tag match with her friend Marina Shafir. And hey, there you go. And that's also why it was on Ring of Honor and not on TV. It was just like a little like, yeah, you know, that sounds like fun. I'll do it. So,
hey, I wonder if it'll lead to anything, because you know what? If Rousey's going to put in as much effort as she did in that tag match and at Wrestling Revolver, she might be worth bringing in. And you don't have to have her as like a full time, but you bring her in for a few like 4 to 6 week storylines here and there. I think there's a benefit to having Ronda Rousey on the roster. I really don't know what her max peak is, because she really wasn't valuable at all in her last WWE stint. But she was such a big difference maker. But we're now, what, 7 years removed from her at the end of her UFC run? Like, that's a long time.
Yeah.
But either way, she's a capable enough worker, and especially if you structure those matches right, they can be very, very good to great. And she may be a benefit to have on the AEW women's division.
Yeah. Yeah, something to keep an eye on. Sandy Hook actually happened. Let's see. Sting's retirement match is going to be at Revolution on March 3rd, which will be at Greensboro Coliseum, which is famously the site of the 1988 Ric Flair and Sting 45-minute draw, which they did a whole segment about on Dynamite. But
Fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
In the building at Dynamite, nobody saw that. They didn't play that vignette.
Oh, right. Yeah, you
know what they
did?
They did it live for the crowd. So that was kind of cool.
Interesting.
I will say, I think it was Chris Zellner who was disappointed that it was in Greensboro and thought it should have been in Baltimore. What's your take on that?
I mean, if I were to pick a different market, it would have been Atlanta, just because of the WCW connection. I get where he's coming from with Baltimore, because that was an important part of, you know, the late 80s, mid-Atlantic slash not quite WCW, but, you know, that transition period. I just don't think it's like modern day. I don't think the connection is as strong you know, otherwise. So. We're getting down to the crumbs here. AEW has filed to trademark East West Express, which is the tag name of Jordan Oliver and Nick Wayne on the indies. This is notable because I believe, according to Sean Ross Sapp, Oliver wasn't aware of that filing until he was asked about it. Womp womp. If I were him, I would oppose that, and I think you would be able to win that pretty easily, but to be seen. Just something to keep an eye on. Just a random note in response to some completely random person trying to push a report that Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley were soon going to jump to WWE, which is some extreme wish casting there. Sean Ross Sapp tweeted that both are signed through 2027. So, no. All right. And then upcoming matches announced. For Rampage tonight, we have a squash by the Don Callis family, Takeshita, Hobbs, and Fletcher. We have a 8-man tag, the best friends adjacent, Trent, Orange Cassidy, Hook, and Danhausen against Evil Uno, Alex Reynolds, Matt Menard, and Angelo Parker. We have a 6-woman tag, Soraya, Ruby Soho, and Anna Jay against Chris Statlander, Hikaru Shida, and Sky Blue, aka the only women's wrestlers in AEW, seemingly at times. And then we have a little tune-up, which could be awesome if they give it any time at all. We have Pentagon, or Penta El Zero Miedo, or Penta M, or whatever name he has, along with Hijo del Vikingo and Commander against Brian Cage, J.D. Drake, and Anthony Henry. If that was given 18 minutes at an indie show, that would rock. I
will say it did rock. It
did they get any amount of time at all?
It felt like it was like 12 to 15 minutes. Cool. It felt like it got substantial time. It was good. Fun. It was good. The guys behind me, when I was in the building, had never seen Vikingo. They were like, holy shit, what is that? Like, they were blown away. And I looked at them like, oh, is this your first time seeing Vikingo? They're like, yeah, who is that guy? I'm like, he's Rey Mysterio Jr., but modern day. He's breaking the mold. Like the shooting star press, like Hurricanrana. I think he did that.
Oh, God.
No, it was that match I recommend. I recommend I believe it'll be the opener, Best Friends, and Danhausen and Hook against Dark Order and 2.0. That was good. Everything in the middle is very skippable. The women's match did have some advancement with the Outcast, like a little storyline they have going on with Saraya and Ruby Soho. But it's not really, you don't really have to watch it other than that. There was some tension between Statlander and Sky Blue. I thought was noteworthy, but whatever. The Don Callis family, that was a fun little squash. But I would recommend the opener and the main event. Definitely worth your time watching. Everything else in the middle, whatever.
Fair enough.
Good little hour of wrestling television. Like, nothing was bad. It's just good. I would go out of your way to see the Workhorsemen and Brian Cage versus the Luchadors. That was fun as hell. But it's also a match, if you've been watching wrestling for like we do for a long time, you've seen it before. It's still fun to watch like Vikingo and JD Drake.
Oh yeah, that sounds like an awesome matchup.
JD Drake looks like a farmer from a town of 214 people in the Midwest. He'd find at the local bar drinking his weight in old Milwaukee at 5 p.m. on a Tuesday. But you know what? The dude can work and he shockingly moves well.
Yeah, I just wish he was like 10 years younger. I think he really could have had a run somewhere. And it's a shame that he, you know, like Evolve was where he's topped out at, you know. Should have been a TV guy on a bigger level, I should say. Collision announced for tomorrow, of course, are the C2 matches. I'm going with Africano Classic. Eddie Kingston, Brian Danielson, which I am hyped for. Claudio Castagnoli and Brody King, which could also be awesome. And Andrade versus Daniel Garcia, which could also be awesome. So here's hoping that those three all deliver. And hey, look at me structuring things so we can transition. Let's talk about the Continental Classic. What do you think of it so far?
Look, this feels like the dog days of the G1, like Night 8 and Beepu. Like, it's good wrestling. There's been nothing bad. My favorite match was Roosh and Mark Briscoe. I went 4.5 minus. Swerve and Jay White, I also went 4.5 minus, but I preferred the first one better. They just beat the living shit out of each other. And they did high spots. They did all kinds of cool stuff. And then Roosh just beats his ass. I thought it was so good. The styles are different. It's fun. It's just good, solid wrestling. And nothing's been elite. You're missing some of the real tippy-top guys. which, and I understand why. Hey, you know, it's not perfect. It's not exactly a G1, but it's also American television wrestling. I think for what they're trying to accomplish, this is very good. And I love, absolutely love that a guy like Jay Lethal is in there. Because one, you can just beat him like a drum. And two, he feels like a credible threat to win every match because he is a good, solid worker. And he has a Fire Pro Wrestling creative moveset. He really does. He does cool stuff. I thought the match with Moxley was awesome. It was fun. It was different. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this tournament so far.
Yeah, it's been pretty great. I have gone notebook, low-level notebook, but notebook all the same, I think 4 times by now. I thought the... what is my favorite from it so far? I thought the main event from Dynamite, the first one last week, was a good one. Mox and Mark Briscoe, I thought that hit 4 stars on an otherwise kind of dire show. I went 4.25 on Brody and Eddie. I thought that just kind of ruled, just these guys beating the shit out of each other. I did go 4.5 on Briscoe and Roosh. And I went 4.25 on Wyatt and Swerve. So I think those 4, like, not, we're not talking match of the year candidates here. We have yet to get really one of those. But I think all of them have been like, hey, pretty damn fun. And nothing to sneeze at. You know, I do think there's another level here. I think, you know, basically anytime Danielson gets in the ring is a potential for, you know, that level of match, and we will see what comes of it. But I do think this has been a good start. I think
I
they
will
are.
Say, I don't think we're going to get a match to your kind of match.
Really?
I don't think so. I don't think with it being on American television, I just don't think that they're going to peak that high, and only because they're on American television, not because of the participants. I just think it limits you too much.
Yeah, but AEW has had Match of the Year candidates on TV. I mean, hell, one of my top 5 matches now, but at one point a serious contender for Match of the Year. Actually, it's still number 3 or 4 for me is Vikingo and Omega from Dynamite back in March. I mean,
yeah, but look at what it didn't have. Limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they wrestled through a couple commercial breaks, but they did the picture-in-picture. And they didn't have a time limit. Like, I just think how the Continental Classic is structured, it's just not conducive to a match of the year contender. And that's I'm not using it as an insult. I just think it's a reality. Sure.
I think it makes it harder. I don't want to, like, poo-poo what you're saying. But I do think that it's possible. It's just not easy. But yeah, I mean, that'll be fun to watch, I think. Fun to see if anyone can hit it. And, you know, I 100% believe in Danielson. So
I do think if you're going to have one, it'll be the final. That's going to be the one that's going
to
top out.
Yeah, I mean, once you get to the pay-per-view, you know, I think those concerns are gone because I imagine both will be without time limits. You won't be doing just the 20-minute, you know, limit. But yeah, these could be really, there could be some really fun stuff coming up, and I hope they get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I guess we kind of ran through that pretty quickly. We're hour 15 in. Do you have any other thoughts on TV from the past week? Because I didn't get to watch Rampage. I do want to bury some stuff from Collision last week.
I'll let you do that because I'm going to be honest. I only caught bits and pieces of Collision. This week is probably my busiest of the year because college football championship weekend is this weekend. Last weekend was rivalry weekend. Vikings played on Monday night, and then now it's a bye week, so I'm scrambling to get a bunch of stuff kind of handled there. So Collision is not something I caught a lot of, but I will say, I went 6-1-1 against the spread last week, baby. If you would have bet all my plays, you would have made a bunch of money.
Nice. Well, okay. Here's the good and the bad from Collision, in my opinion. Claudio Daniel was disappointing. Daniel Garcia, I went 3.5 on that. And that's like, if I did the plus minus thing, it probably would have been a 3.5 minus. For this whole Daniel Garcia, you know, needs to become a wrestler storyline to really work out. Like, I think he got to hit some higher notes than that. And I think between that and his kind of lackluster match with MJF, I'm hoping he steps it up. I know he's great. I love him. I think he's a fantastic worker, but he's got to do it. And this Claudio match, while fun and good, was not at that high level that you would hope for him to be at. Two other things I want to talk about real quick. Gravity had maybe the worst televised performance in a while. It feels like every single move he did, he botched. It was really rough. They progressively got worse. Meanwhile, Commander's just like busting out crazy moves and hitting them all. So Commander kept the match from being a total disaster on their side of the thing. And I mean, Buddy Matthews and Malachi Black were solid. They did good stuff. But Gravity just like, he tried to do some, there was one thing in particular that was called as a jawbreaker out of a suplex or something. And that was a very generous attempt to cover by the announce team. Really bad. AW tried to air the promo hyping the return of Dante Martin, and in the middle of it, an ad starts playing for the NBA in-season tournament. cutting it completely off. And then when they get it back, so it's just Dante Martin wandering on screen before he can really say anything. They just play a commercial on top of it. So completely ruined that. They replayed that later in the show, but it kind of killed the whole, wow, Dante Martin's coming back surprise aspect. And then there was an underwhelming FTR Righteous match, which should not have been, because those teams are good. And I was actually pretty excited for that. But they, Dax blew a springboard spot pretty bad. And then, just some other, messiness in there involving, I think, Dutch and Dax. Just not a great night. But then, this is a Big Bill podcast. And Big Bill cut a promo. And honestly, look, if you told me 3 years ago that Ricky Starks and Big Bill would be in a tag team and they would do a promo segment where Ricky Starks didn't talk any and it would be awesome because Big Bill's great, I would not have believed you. But that's what happened on this show. And Big Bill is a big talker and a big star. This ruled. If you haven't checked this out, take the time.
Big Bill. You know what?
We're still offering spots on here, man. On the Big Bill bandwagon.
You know what we need to do? We need to call up our good buddy Dave Meltzer and have him bring on Big Bill with him. Let's make them a tag team. Call him the San Jose New York Pipeline.
There you go.
Yeah. Big Bill, if you ever listen to this, we want to have you on the show and praise your genius in the ring.
He's just a great worker, man. He's doing fantastic right now. And gotta love him. Gotta love Big Bill. Let's see. I think that's there's a good Adam Copeland promo on here, though he did get dangerously close to going to that place. Keith Lee cut a good
promo.
What?
I was okay with going to that place.
I was okay with it.
You know why? And it relates back to the article that I wrote for Voice of Wrestling earlier this week. It was authentic.
Yeah.
It was real.
He was going to that place, which feels very WWE.
It was very genuine. It felt like you were listening to Adam Copeland and you weren't listening to some derived bullshit character. You were listening to the man. And you know what? If he goes to that place where he gets that annoyed and frustrated and pissed off and he gets a little bit animated, I'm okay with that. You know why? It's real. That matters to me. It felt authentic and real. And if you can do that, you can get away with a lot of things.
Yeah. But I thought this was a lot of fun. Not a perfect show. I think a couple good promos really carried the in-between segments, but I did like the opener a little bit and loved the main. And then we got to Dynamite, and Bryan Danielson is fantastic on commentary. He's so good. I really liked his interplay with Eddie Kingston after Eddie, you know, they showed Eddie's promo where he doubted himself after losing to Malakai. And I thought that was great, and I'm really excited for their match. And they need to start doing that stuff. They need to start having people cut promos on each other to hype these matches. They need to start building them up more. And and this week we even had a good MJF segment, I have to say. You know, it wasn't great, but it was good. And it was there was no ha-ha bullshit. There was no screaming Adam, and there was no Adam Cole.
Real,
it felt real,
authentic. It felt like you were listening to MJF again, and not what MJF wants to be. It felt like you were listening to him. And authenticity is going to be the thing that saves this company and moves it in the right direction. Guys like Moxley, the old MJF before all this derived brochacho bullshit. Samoa Joe. Is there anybody more authentic in the history of pro wrestling than Samoa Joe?
Not very many. Not recently, at least.
John Moxley, maybe. They're on the same level. They are as authentic as they come. You believe they're going to beat your ass. They're scary looking. They're legit tough guys. And they're going to beat the piss out of you.
Yeah.
When Samoa Joe wins that belt at World's End, his first defense needs to be against John Moxley. Or his first pay-per-view defense. You know why? Oh, God. How great would that be? A John Moxley versus Samoa Joe match. I did see somebody opining that Samoa Joe versus Sting should be Sting's final match.
I mean,
I get it, but I feel like you should try and put somebody over. I do think it would be kind of cool for Sting to win on his way out, but I also think it would be kind of cool for Darby to beat him.
You got to have Darby beat him, I think.
Sting has never lost in AEW.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they mentioned it. I don't know if they mentioned it on the pre-tape, but they mentioned it on Rampage. Sting is 24-0 in AEW. Tags, I don't know if he's had a singles match. He might have had one or two. But in tags, 24-0.
Yeah. Sting rules. And I thought Dante Martin looked really good in his return.
He looked great.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what he does. I think he can really be a star. The last big thing to talk about, I think, here is Christian Cage and Adam Copeland putting on
so good
a great segment.
It was so good.
It's something to watch for the next month, you know, as we're finalizing awards and everything. And I'd love to do that at some point in the next month plus with you. Is Christian,
you know what we should do? We should do our own, like a show wrestler of the year poll.
Okay, sure. We can do that. I was going to ask you, though, is Christian your interview of the year?
Top three for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's won.
The only guy I would pause and think about, I think, is that has done enough of them. It's probably John Moxley. I think Eddie Kingston disappeared a little bit too much. I think Osprey. Samoa Joe. Osprey is not bad.
Sometimes it's hard to think about him for interview of the year.
Just because so New much Japan.
Of what, so, yeah, because of the style, so much of what they do backstage.
As the dogs rise up in rebellion against Tyler.
It's a Claire. So with her seizures and stuff, they think it's meningitis, and then she like tilts her head and like walks with walls and bats into stuff. She just knocked over the baby gate blocking the downstairs. That's why you've heard some noises. I apologize, but I can't leave her alone down here without worrying about her. So
as a long time shutdown full cast fan, audio quality is optional. It's kind of always been my stance because my brain's been poisoned by that stupid show. I love that segment. I thought it was a nice counterpoint to the, you know, now infamous Christian Cage fuck you segment. The fact that they missed censoring Adam Copeland saying it, perfect, loved it. Not intentional, but very funny. Any other, since you were there in person, you know, Tyler, do you have any thoughts from this Dynamite that we didn't talk about already?
So I've been to two. Odie, be quiet. Yeah, there you go. Let Dad talk, okay? He's going to keep barking.
Dad's cooking.
Odie, calm down. You're just barking at your sister, you idiot. I do love my dog, I promise. I'd only been to two AEW shows in Minnesota before. All right, you know what? This is just too much. I'm going to have to throw something at him because he's just being an Odie.
To him, surely.
Well, it was a soft plush egg, like an Easter egg. So I've been to Full Gear, and I went to All Out 2021 and 2022. But then the only Dynamite I had attended was Quake at the Lake. That wasn't a real Dynamite. It was like quasi-pay-per-view. You had Brody King and Darby in the coffin match to open the show. The main event was Lionheart versus Jon Moxley with CM Punk's return. Like, that wasn't a real Dynamite. This was a Dynamite. And you know what? The crowd was hot. There was like this 40-year-old dude screaming out Adam and yelling at wrestlers. He was yelling at Jay White that he sucked. People around him were just laughing. It was entertaining, but it was fun as Odie keeps borking because he also likes to yell at Jay White.
Who doesn't?
But yeah, it was a good crowd. Wasn't super full. I'd probably say around 4,500 in the building. They had it the entire top draped off, but I could only buy like one ticket when I went to go buy tickets because I was supposed to get a media ticket, but it fell through. Mm-hmm. Odie, enough, bud. You're going to get dinner. Yep, you're going to get dinner in a minute. Yeah, there you go. It ended up being a great seat. Had a great time. Rampage was actually good because the Quake at the Lake Rampage was the worst Rampage they'd ever done. It was so bad as my dog's knocked something else down.
Oh boy.
It's chaotic time post neurology appointment, let me tell you. But yeah, it was good. Everybody kept saying restore the feeling. I left feeling better about this company than I had in a long time. It felt like an old school Dynamite. It had good wrestling. Like three matches that were either in the notebook or borderline notebook. And you know what? Emi Sakura and Julia Hart was pretty good. And I got to say this. Julia Hart is a future star. She gets it. She gets it. The little things, the mannerisms, soaking up the crowd. Because she's a Minnesota girl. She's one of us. I don't know how it came across on TV. She got a tremendous pop when her music hit and she came out. Everybody was behind her. And it was awesome. Her work is improving. Still sloppy, but she's what, 22?
Yeah, she's ridiculously young.
She's a baby. So she's 22 years old and she's this over and her character is so good. Imagine what's going to happen when she figures everything out and puts it all together. This could be a real superstar down the line in the business. I'm intrigued to see what happens with her.
Yeah. I think she could be a huge star and it's just a matter of growth and time, I think. So, well, anything else you want to talk about from this past week of TV or AEW or, you
know? I think I want to talk about my article quick. John Moxley is the savior of AEW. It really hit me when he came out and where this company needs to shift. Especially that CM Punk promo on Raw. Nothing about that was authentic. Nothing about that was real. It was somebody wrote it for Voice of Wrestling. I think it was Ford St. Dennis who's been writing for us for a little bit. Corporate money.
Corporate money.
Punk. All it is a money grab. And you know what? Good for Punk. Like, if you can get paid that much money, go get paid that much money. But you look at his promo from Rampage when he debuted, that felt real, authentic. You're going to hear that a lot from me over the next few weeks. Authenticity needs to be the focus of this company moving forward, bar none. It starts with John Moxley, Eddie Kingston, Samoa Joe, old MJF. MJF is not a lost cause. He's doing is a lost cause, but you can get him back. And you know what? It was a start on Wednesday. We've seen this before where you pop off and they hear the criticism, have one really good week, and then they fall back. Do it again. Do it a third time. Do it a fourth time. Go into that pay-per-view and kill it. This group has a real chance, Fred, to make a difference. And authenticity will be the key to unlocking whatever future AEW has. Because if you can continue to stay authentic and real, it's going to separate you from the bullshit in the other company. Because you know what? Cartoonish stuff works for some people. I even will admit cartoonish stuff will work in AEW. Like the Swerve's House stuff, I think it's a little stupid. You know what? It works. Who cares? And Swerve is over like a mother. He is so over. Maybe it was just the dichotomy of him versus Jay White. The entire building wanted him to win.
Even
though he's a heel. Like,
I think he babyfaced himself a little bit with that Page match, but yeah.
Yeah,
it's a discussion for another time. The path of Swerve Strickland to babyface star, and if it's possible, and what it would take. I mean, it is possible, but interesting stuff. For sure. Just thinking about the future path of him.
Yeah, it's authenticity is the key.
Yes.
Be authentic. And if AEW does that, the sky is the limit. Because you know what was real and why AEW was so great initially? Great matches, great in-ring stories, not contrived bullshit, not logic gaps. Look, we got frustrated with some stuff here and there, but the core and the heart of AEW was always great wrestling with authenticity.
Yeah.
Get back to that, the sky's the limit. Make it happen, Tony Khan.
They need to do it. They need to those two things need to be their central tenets, and I think that's really what set them apart initially and helped them become popular, like far beyond what people expected in 2019. And I think they need to stick with that. I mean, you can work around that to some extent for sure, but I don't think you can abandon that. And I feel like that's been the biggest issue with the Bray Chacho storyline is they kind of moved away from it, and I think that's just, you know, not viable.
Hey Fred, I want to read this to you before we go, because in college football you get the extra year of eligibility due to COVID-19,
right?
And you'll get this because you and I are around the same age. College eligibility is the new Columbia House CD deal.
That's good. That is a good joke. That is a very
shout
good
out joke. NFL scout, draft scout Emery Hunt. That guy rules.
That's a good one. All right. Well, I think that's about it for the day. Do want to note before we go, one, don't forget the Dave Meltzer interview. Again, you can email us questions, hungiepod, HungiePod at gmail.com. You can also drop them in our Discord channel where I just also posted my to-date top 100 wrestlers on the year. Which I've been updating every week or so for the past couple months. And also today is World AIDS Day. So, think about that some, I guess. All right.
The way you said it's World AIDS Day?
Yes, AIDS Day. World AIDS Day.
Hey, you know what? The one of the best ways to try and stop the pandemic of AIDS, or the epidemic, I mean, help infrastructure in Africa. One of the reasons why so much of this, of these medications and stuff can't get to the people, the infrastructure in the country, the continent of Africa is horseshit. It's awful.
Yes.
Trying to get around and like just drive like semis and stuff we take for granted. There's no interstate system in Africa. Infrastructure is the number one thing that will help these countries get that to a spot where we don't have like third world communities anymore. we can get them the supplies that they need quickly, efficiently, and cost less money to do so. Help the infrastructure of Africa, and you can help a lot more. The good that people are already doing with stuff like the AIDS epidemic can be helped way more if you fix the infrastructure. Remember that celebrate isn't the right word, as we
commemorate
World AIDS Day.
Yeah, I don't think I could say it much better. I'm out of stuff to talk about. Finally, thank God. It's been so.
Don't worry,
much.
We'll have Dave Meltzer on Tuesday. We won't have to do a whole lot of talking, and it's going to be a lot of fun. If you have any questions,
I'm so excited for that.
The easiest place to drop those questions is the Voices of Wrestling Discord, where we have our own channel, The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. You can also email us at hungypod@gmail.com. You can DM myself at TheRealForno on Twitter/X, and you can find Fred on about 500 different offshoots, but he is no longer on
Blue Sky.
Elon Musk machine. Thank you guys very much for listening. Like, comment, subscribe, do all the things, help us out. And if you want, there's a link to donate to us in the show notes. I am trying to buy an NFL Blitz arcade machine, and I'm sure Fred wants to buy more packs of cards so he can find another Anna J one of one and sell that on the eBay. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next week with the legend himself, Dave Meltzer. Take care.
Take care, everyone. Have a good one.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.